This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Samantha Watson. The Kuskokwim River community of Nabuskiak has been without power for several days. Nabuskiak Tribal Chief Sharon Williams said the village lost power late Saturday morning due to electrical issues brought on by the ice storm over the weekend. The whole village remains without power, and attempts to restore electricity to some homes failed.
First, they tried turning half of the village on, and then the power plant couldn't take it because there was a short somewhere.
William says some households are able to run on backup generators, though large appliances like refrigerators may require too much to maintain through the outage. William says the native village of Nabuskiak declared a state of emergency yesterday after a water pipe burst, now affecting the community's access to water.
When the lights go back to normal, it's going to take a while to thaw out the wastewater pipe. We need that one to make water. The pipes are going to have to be changed out because they bursted.
William says the stores have been closed. People in the community have been traveling the 10 miles upriver to Bethel via snow machine trails on the Kuskokwim to get food and fuel for generators.
There are some people on Facebook begging if they can catch a ride to Bethel to get food, saying that they're out of food.
The school is running on backup generators and has announced it will operate on a two-hour delay through Friday, December 12th. Any students sheltering in Bethel through the outage are excused from school if reported by their families. Vehicle traffic has started on the lower Kuskokwim River. The early season truck trails are not the official Kuskokwim Ice Road, which is installed and maintained annually by Bethel Search and Rescue, also called BSAR, among other village search and rescue teams and ice road crews. According to BSAR, trucks have reportedly begun using unofficial trails to navigate stretches of the Kuskokwim. Over the weekend, members of BSAR recorded 12 to 14 inches of ice thickness on the river using an ice radar. Bethel Search and Rescue says they'll need to observe 4 to 6 more inches of ice on the river before they start plowing the official ice road. That road will be marked with signage and plowed and is funded annually by state transportation dollars. The early truck trails mark another wave in early river transport this season. It comes after a pop-up of unofficial snow machine trails last week, including one between the communities of Bethel and Gweethluk. Early vehicle travel on the river comes around the same time as it did last year, around the first week of December. The 2024-2025 official Kuskokwim Ice Road remained a work in progress through the end of the year. Tune into KYUK's River Watch on Thursdays at 1 p.m. for Kuskokwim Ice Road updates from Bethel Search and Rescue. The state launched a new telehealth service for Alaskans with intellectual and developmental disabilities last month. It provides 24/7 access to behavioral health services for those who qualify on Medicaid. Pamela Burton works for the Alaska Division of Senior and Disability Services. She says this program will help fill a gap in services for those with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
The availability of providers, specifically behavioral health clinicians that have experience and training in working with an individual with intellectual and developmental disabilities, is really slim in the state. And in some areas, particularly the more rural areas, there's no providers at all.
Burton says the behavioral health providers are from outside Alaska. The service will offer counseling, crisis intervention or triage, and long-term behavioral health support. Clinicians can also refer patients to outside support as needed. Burton says the sources will be especially helpful for people who have both intellectual or developmental disabilities and behavioral health diagnoses.
Those individuals do tend to have a higher rate of crises, emergency room visits, and hospitalizations. And then in Alaska, those barriers are further compounded by geography.
She says the idea for this support came from learning about how similar programs have been used in other states.
And how successful it's been. in really helping to reduce or prevent a crisis situation before it gets to that point, reduce emergency room utilization and hospitalizations.
Burton says the program is free for Alaskans with intellectual and developmental disabilities who qualify under Medicaid. Eligible Alaskans can sign up at the website for the state's Division of Senior and Disabilities Services. After more than a century, a Tlingit clan will once again be the legal owners of a raven helmet worn during the Battle of Sitka in 1804. Non-Native organizations have claimed ownership of the helmet for more than over 100 years and kept it in a museum in Sitka. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry spoke with some of the clan members who helped get the sacred item back, and they say its return will help future generations connect with their history.
More than 200 years ago, Tlingit and other Alaska Native people waged battles against invading and oppressive Russian colonists in Sitka. To this day, those battles are a symbol of Tlingit resistance to colonialism. A Kiksati warrior named Katlian led the attacks, and in 1904, he wore a carved raven helmet during one of the battles. In the early 1900s, the helmet was separated from the Kiksati. It's considered Aut-U, a sacred living clan item, but the raven helmet has been behind glass at the Sheldon Jackson Museum since 1906. Anya Nach Ray Wilson is a Kiksati clan leader and lives in Juneau. He says that Aut-U holds spirits and clan members treat them like relatives.
So when we don't have our items, we can't use them. And there it is sitting right in the museum in Sitka, and we can't use it. And it belongs to us. So it's really hard to accept.
Wilson is 92, and he says that the colonial legacy of the last two centuries have left Tlingit people with only pieces of their history and cultural practices. But when they bring Aut-U back into ceremonies, those items help restore what has been lost.
The main thing is that it's coming back to help our people. We all need help, you know. We need the culture to come back to make our people stronger again.
According to recorded history, this is how the Raven Helmet ended up in the Sheldon Jackson Museum. Three Kiksati men brought it to Alaska's territorial governor, John Brady. Brady co-founded the Presbyterian-run Sitka Industrial and Training School, which is now known as Sheldon Jackson College. The helmet has been in the campus museum since. The state bought the museum and its collection in the 1980s. But for years, Kiksati leaders have said that that isn't how sacred clan items are given away. They're under cultural patrimony, which means all clan members own the item, and no individual can give away sacred clan objects without the clan's approval. So for decades, the Kiksati have been trying to get the helmet back from the state, arguing that it was not ever the state's property. And last month, the Alaska State Museum finally agreed to start the process of returning ownership to the Kiksati. Clan member Dutin Jarek Hope Lang has been fighting to repatriate the helmet just like his grandmother did two decades before. He said the process involved digging into the history of how the helmet changed hands.
If you're asserting you have the right to anything, there must be proof. I want to see it.
The written records claiming ownership start with the Presbyterian Church, which ran the Sitka Industrial and Training School. Then the Alaska State Museums bought the school's museum and its collection in the 1980s. Hope Lang reached out to Jermaine Roth Alam. He's the director of the Presbyterian Church's Center for Repair of Historical Harms and was instrumental in the fight to repatriate the helmet. He says since the handover of the helmet to the Presbyterians didn't follow proper protocols, the church never had a right to the helmet in the first place. Therefore, the church didn't have the right of possession when it sold the helmet as part of the museum's collections to the state decades later. Ross Alum hopes righting the wrongs of the past inspires others to do the same, even if it feels like it's too late.
That should give people confidence to continue to engage in more acts of repair and solidarity, no matter how big the repair job seems to be.
Now, Hope Lang looks forward to a future when the helmet will always be in Kiksati hands. He says the knowledge of clan ownership makes a difference.
It changes the narrative. When you go in and you look at this piece, you're not saying it belongs to somebody else, it belongs to you.
He says young clan members won't know the pain of not being able to claim it and to use it for ceremony.
And the exciting thing is for the young people below us who will become the caretakers, the future ancestors, that they won't know this trauma. This won't be passed on to them.
The Alaska State Museums said there are still several steps before the repatriation process is complete. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
This is KYUK News. I'm Samantha Watson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yuktun Gnomchit coming up.